May your paths be safe, your floors unbroken, and may the house fill your eyes with beauty.
Welcome to the Busy Girls Book Club. We are bringing you the internet's most popular books and letting you know whether or not to take time out of your busy schedules to give them a read. I'm Caitlin.
I'm Catherine.
And I'm Casey. And today we are reading a book called Piranesi by Susanna Clark. It's been pretty popular in the Greek mythology space, even though it's not explicitly Greek mythology. It is essentially a reimagining of the concept of the labyrinth in Greek mythology. And we follow the main character, Piranesi, and he is kind of living in this labyrinthine universe by himself. And the story kind of follows his struggle for human connection, his struggle to understand the labyrinth, and essentially his journey to escape. But it's a really interesting story. So it's not super plot forward, I guess I would say.
One of Casey's litfic recommendations.
Yeah, it's very litfic.
I've actually owned this on my shelf for like 2 years and just haven't gotten to it because it was stupid popular a while back and I feel like it's kind of resurged.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it won some awards. I can't remember which ones they are, but it's kind of has a very strong cult following of the people who have read this book. There's like a group who just love it like down. So yeah. Do you guys have reviews?
I do. And I want to say the 1-star reviews did not disappoint. There have been some disappointing weeks that we've had where the 1-star reviews are just essays that aren't funny, but I was pleased with what I found.
So, I have like a billion to read.
Yeah, so. There's like a billion. This one is just made me cackle out loud. On Goodreads, it says, "I can't help it. I need a plot and something I can hold on to. It slipped through my fingers into the 43rd vestibule to the right of a statue covered in seaweed."
If you know, you know. I know. I love that one. Caitlin, do you want to go?
Sure. I have a 3-star. It says, "I don't get the hype, sadly. I expected something smart and fantastical and got mean academics and birds. It was definitely nicely atmospheric, but ultimately felt as empty as the house's halls."
Wow. Oh,
that's but that was still 3 stars. I just like all the little story drop, you know, love a little mention of things from the story in there.
Yeah, I love it. Okay, I have a bunch. We'll see how many I decide to read, but they're all 1-star reviews because, as Catherine said, they were really funny for this book. Reading this book felt exactly like listening to someone tell you in excruciating detail all about the crazy dream they had last night. Poorly structured, grasping at meaning, and just so, so uninteresting. I was like, damn. For the readers of Neil Gaiman's The Ocean at the End of the Lane and fans of Madeline Searcy, whoever wrote this blurb is a marketing genius because it's the only reason I picked this book up. But unfortunately, they very clearly have a pretty significant crack problem because what in the ever-living fuck is the boring-ass garbage fire of a book bearing no tangible resemblance to either of those stories that are so far superior they might as well exist on some entirely other transcendental plane?
Jesus.
Yeah. Another 1-star should be retitled Paralysis.
Oh.
Yeah.
Then this one's probably my favorite 1-star. Read this in preparation for catabasis.
Damn.
Another busy girl book. So if you know, you know.
It's on that for my book rec because I was already going to say.
Yeah. And then I'll end on this one. 1-star. Esquire calls this book spellbinding. I find I am immune.
Well, got some savage ones out there.
Yeah. The people who did not like the book, they had something to say. And honestly, it was pretty funny.
The other thing is, the people who didn't like the book still finished the book because it's short.
Yes.
It's very short. Yeah.
So they know how to say what they want to say.
Right, right.
They read it.
But in general, this is like honestly a pretty beloved book. The overall Goodreads rating is 4.2 out of 5. The Fable rating is 4.2 out of 5. And the Storygraph review rating is 4.29 out of 5. Where did you guys come down?
I'll go first because I don't think either of you know my review. So it's highly anticipated. I finished this book 5 minutes before we were supposed to record, because I procrastinate and I just wasn't that interested in it, to be honest. And I did have to listen to the audiobook to supplement me. I gave it 3 stars. I appreciate it. I am not its target's audience, that's for damn sure. I was very confused at the beginning because I went in completely blind and didn't read the back cover. So I was just like, what the fuck in vestibules is this? Like, what are these statues? What am I? Where am I? Who am I? And it made sense over time, but it just was quite a slow-paced book for how short it was. And as a busy girl in a reading slump, it just hit at a very wrong time. But I can appreciate what it was trying to do, and I can appreciate that it's not for me.
Fair. I'm actually happy with that. I was worried that you were going to rate this book much lower. So
I thought it was well written.
Yeah.
Well, don't worry. I got you, queen, because I rated it a 4. I liked it. I waffled. It's probably a low 4, but it was still a 4 because I really didn't find a lot wrong with it. It's just not one of my like all-time favorite reads. I love the imagery of the house. The character is endearing, even though you have no idea who he is or what he's doing for like half the book. And while it's not like nothing about the plot is surprising, it was still well written and like really beautiful. And then I like the ending is a little bit open, and I got on Reddit and was like reading everyone's like theories and just commentary on the book. And I'm like, yep, I love a book that makes you just think, and that you can draw so many life comparisons to. And really, yeah, 4 stars, mostly for the writing, like excellent writing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Very well written book. I gave it a 5 stars. Of course I did, which is why I wanted to read it. This book.
Is it about right when it comes to a lit fic?
Yeah.
Usually about how it goes.
3, 4, 5. Yeah.
Yeah. Roughly. Yeah. This is kind of our tolerance for lover, especially very slow kind of winding lit fic stories. Yeah. This book was just like so beautiful to me. I loved the writing. I loved the main character. I think it's one of the most unique reinterpretations of mythology I've ever read. And I really, really loved that. Loved the imagery. It's very like fairy tale-esque in the way the story kind of unfolds. And so this book was always going to be a hit with me because like lit fic kind of fairy tales are just like, that's like my niche. Absolutely. But I find myself thinking about this book all the time. It's just one of those reads that really, really stuck with me. I ended up like printing out like one of the final quotes in the book and like putting it on my mirror at home. Like this book is like really like a very just, it really resonated with me. I feel like I read it at the right time. And so it's 5 stars for sure.
It was written for you.
It was. It's like every single thing I like in a book.
I knew Casey would like it. I was unsure how Catherine would feel.
I knew it was going to be 5 stars from her.
Yeah, but it's okay because Catherine's about to get out of her reading slump with one of our next ones.
Yeah. We'll feed the shadow daddy crazy.
We'll fix her. Don't worry.
Okay, cool. Well, with that, let's wait. Yeah, it is time. Let's get into our non-spoiler discussion. Is the book more plot? Oh my gosh, I cannot talk today. More plot or character driven?
There's no plot for most of the book, so it's character driven. It's
obviously character, yeah.
Yeah, you're trying to figure out who the character is.
Mm-hmm.
What he's doing, his purpose.
Character had mental breakdown. and trying to rebuild the pieces.
Yeah. But isn't particularly driven to do so because he's still like happy. It's like he's very vibing.
He's vibing and you're like, dude, why are you vibing? I have questions.
Yeah. Right. He just loves his birds, loves his seaweed.
Yeah.
Loves his statues. He doesn't want to expand his world. He wants to keep it very small.
Right. But he is lonely. And that's ultimately what drives his character development. Okay. Have you or would you read other books by the author? She has written other things, but I actually think her other books are like comics or something. They're like very unrelated.
Oh, I haven't even looked up her other books. I have seen the cover before of The Wood at Midwinter. I don't know. I would read another one. I liked it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she has. I think.
Oh, that's why I've seen it. That came out more recent. The Wood at Midwinter.
Yes.
Ooh, she hasn't come out this year.
I think her book, Jonathan Strange, was fairly popular at the time. It's very old now. It's like 2004, I think. But I think that book was well received as well.
Yeah.
I don't know anything about her other books, but I would read them.
The one that came out this year, is coming out this year, is called The Bishop of Durham Attempts to Surrender the City.
Mm.
I don't know. Yes, there's a very English like tone to the book.
It's very English. Because they do the stupid ass one quotation mark thing. I'm like, bitch, just use a normal quotation mark. It's my biggest gripe with English novels is just the quotation marks of characters when they're speaking.
That's so funny. I honestly didn't even notice, but it does have English vibe.
Yeah, it irks me to no end. And I know it's just like, that's what it is there. And it's different here. But like going from an American to reading that, I'm like, why? Why is our punctuation so different? This is really annoying.
Well, sometime if you need something, ask Catherine about the Oxford comma.
Fucking hell.
You've got some time on your hands. But yeah, I think there's multiple important scenes in this book that unfold over tea. So, you know.
Yes. Yeah. Very, very English. But I would read other books by her. She's a good writer.
Yeah. Okay, the book is short, but how was the pacing? How long did it take you to read?
Catherine.
I mean, technically.
Catherine like winced.
Yeah, I mean, technically a week, because I started it like a week ago and then finished it today because I had to. So like pacing wise, it happened. I did fall asleep partially while reading it today. So, you know.
I read it in like two or three chunks. I thought the pacing was fine. While, like you said, it's not the most like plot driven riveting book, but it's done in like short sections because it's epistolary, they're diary entries, and then it's short book. So
I thought the pacing was good. It's definitely just a slower paced book. It's just not action oriented. So I think that when I was reading, I actually did have kind of a love-hate relationship with that. I think it pays off and it's done intentionally, but it's definitely like, I think the book is the right amount of pages for what it is. Like it doesn't make you wait too long. So I think the pacing is good.
Yeah. What about, would you watch this if it was a movie or TV show?
Yes. Immediately, yes. I could not stop imagining. Yes, the house, seeing the house brought to life. Yes, like.
So a part of me, this was one of them when I was reading that I was like, I love my vision in my head of the house and I wouldn't want anyone to like touch that.
Yeah.
But also, I don't know, so much of it is thoughts in letters that I'd be curious how they could even do it. So I would say no.
I just don't think I'd be very interested in a movie.
I think this could be such a good mystery because if it was a movie, it would just be more focused on like Piranesi finding out who he is. but all the flashbacks, learning about the other guy who's in there with him, I feel like it would actually be a very suspenseful movie. So I would love it.
Okay. Well, it is time for our busy girl ratings. How are we feeling?
I'm going to stick with my three because I don't think this book is for everyone. And for it being as short as it is quite the journey through it. It's not an easy read because it's written very differently from other books. And you have to get used to the vestibules and the statues and the labyrinth, which that's kind of the point of it, because it's supposed to be like losing yourself in a labyrinth. So I'll stick with my three. Yeah.
Yeah, it's fair.
I'll actually match your three. I thought it was a fine pacing and a great book. However, I wouldn't recommend it to like everyone. It's certainly more of a fantasy lit fic lovers niche, where people who are into like rom-coms or thrillers or things like that, they would not like this. So I'll give it a three.
Yeah, I'm not going to go all the way down to a three, but I am going to lower my five to a four. I think it's short enough that ups its busy girl rating a little bit for me, because even if it's not your thing, you don't have to spend a ton of time on it. And it's so well written, but I also do understand, like, you know, you have to kind of just want to read a lit fic book or else you're not going to enjoy it. Like, if you want like a fantasy or a rom-com that's like more genre fiction, like, it's just not going to scratch that itch for you.
Yeah, it's just like a little more intellectual than some people might want.
Right.
If you read for escapism, probably don't want to pick this book up, because you'll be escaping into a labyrinth.
Yeah, escaping into a pit of self-reflection.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm so excited to talk about this book. That's our spoiler alert. I do think if you want to read this book, you should go in blind and really let the mystery of the book unfold. So don't spoil it for yourself. Read it and come back and then listen to us talk about it. Okay. Question one, what did you guys think of the world, the house?
Love. I know Catherine, not so much. But
no, I love the world. Yeah.
It is confusing at first because you're just in there wandering around and you're like, what is happening? But I think it is one of the most unique and well-described like fantasy settings I have ever read. And I totally felt like I was watching him walk through the house. Like, it was so described despite being this massive, massive place. And I kind of grew to love it like the character did.
Yeah, I totally agree. It's so unique to me. I've just really never read anything like it. Especially just the love and affection with which we see it through, because we see it through like Piranesi's eyes, and he is so enmeshed in the house and like loves it so much and has devoted so much of his time there to like exploring it, that I just like really developed that attachment to it as well. Even though it was ultimately like meant to be a prison, it was really became very special to him, and it was just so rich and mysterious and just the right amount of dark and dangerous.
Yeah. I thought the world was really well done. It did take a minute to get used to, especially going in blind. I almost wish I didn't totally go in blind, because it pissed me off a bit.
I went in blind. I just saw reviews everywhere, so I bought the book.
Yeah.
Right.
I saw Greek things and I was like, I'm in. Yeah. I loved it going in blind.
Yeah, I did too.
It's not for everybody.
It's different. Different opinions. Different.
Yeah.
People. I can see the like appeal for going in blind, but I feel like I need like structure and balance in order to like figure my life out.
Maybe telling about how we're feeling in our personal lives.
Yeah. But. No. Like. Yes. Yes. It hit me at a bad time. Let's just say that right now. But I thought the world was really well written. The details given to the statues, once you finally got over the fact that you're going to get these details about these statues and how many of them you're going to get details about. I thought they were really cool. It did make you feel like you're getting lost in this labyrinth, and he is kind of your only person who can take you through, because no one else can figure it out, but he has. So you're definitely like tethered to his narrative and to his like brain and how he's unfolding throughout the book, which I thought was very interesting and unique. And I love birds, so birds were great in it. Well, I was like, okay, I love an albatross, love an albatross, yeah. Baby. Love all the baby birds. Love all the animals.
Yeah. Okay. So Piranesi, the unreliable narrator, what did you guys think of him? The book is told through his journal entries, which I didn't know when I picked up this book, and I normally don't like books told that way, but obviously I ended up loving this one. What did you guys think about it?
I have said before, I'm not always a journal epistolary girly, and I feel like we've read several lately that have actually been pretty good. I would have been fine if this one had not been journals, because I get it. It ended up, at first I didn't understand why it was journals, and then it ended up being part of the plot that it was journals. So like, I get it. But also reading the fourth day of the whatever of the year, the albatross entered the hall. So like every page kind of made me want to punch the book.
Yeah. At first I thought the dates were important and I was kind of losing my mind over it. And then I realized that it actually doesn't really matter that much. And then the reading experience was a lot better. Yeah.
I was waiting for it to turn. Like
you could ignore the titles,
I thought I had
and the
to
headers.
Read it to see if there was not going to be the year the albatross entered. I was like, okay. I wasted so many words reading that.
Yeah. I think that's my main gripe with the book, is that header kind of situation where it's like a header, and then the header is like just basically repeated in the subheader, and it looks wrong on Kindle. I don't know what it looks like on like hardcover book, but it looked weird on Kindle because there were just random breaks, because it's all one chapter with different journal entries. I almost wish that they had just done journal entry per chapter, like an MM Lion, because the spacing looked weird for me. But that's just like a nitpicky critique. But I do think that it could have been told without being journal entries, and I would have liked it more if it was, but I understand it's all about like how he's unraveling, and him being a copious note taker allowed him to figure out who he is. So I get the importance of it, but I feel like it's not totally necessary.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, I loved Piranesi. I think he's a very strong, very three-dimensional main character. And he really did surprise me throughout the book, because like the big spoiler is obviously that he was forced into the labyrinth on behalf of another researcher who was trying to extract this like treasure that he thought was in the labyrinth. And then Piranesi loses his mind. And so he kind of becomes just like a totally different person, because he loses all his memories. He can't remember the regular human world. And then he becomes someone new again when he like re-enters the human world. But I think we said this during MM Lion, if you're going to do an epistolary novel, your book is really only as good as your main character. And I do think the main character was strong enough that it didn't bother me as much as it would otherwise.
What did you think? So at first, for most of the book, there's one other living person in the house. What did you think of the other? And you mentioned he was looking for a sort of treasure, a great and secret knowledge, some sort of power. And it ultimately he was using Piranesi. So what did you think?
I mean, I clocked it immediately that he bad guy, and he is like an entitled prick because he keeps showing up in suits. I'm like, okay, so he's from the real world and he's just coming in to drop by to have Piranesi do his bidding. He's treating him like a imbecile. He's treating him like a lesser being. And he keeps mentioning, like, I will have this great power so that I can control the thoughts of lesser beings. And I'm like, that's already a red flag right there, buddy. But I did find his motivations interesting, because, like, the idea of a labyrinth is that there has to be something to it. It doesn't, it's not just a labyrinth to be a labyrinth. There has to be hiding some great treasure. And you could see his logic through and through, but the idea that this labyrinth was never a place to hold this great treasure, I thought it was really clever. But, like, I knew immediately he was the bad guy. He's the villain.
Right.
The scene at the beginning where Piranesi's like, I saw the other through the window. I was waving. He did not see me. I was like, that was one of the things that endeared me to Piranesi, honestly.
Yeah. He was such a happy-go-lucky guy.
I loved it because he's so unbothered and, like, just so genuine. But, like, as readers, we can tell that, like, the other's a bad guy, but Piranesi is so unaware of it. And I liked that contrast. I did really like... I mean, obviously, I hated the other as a person because he's a bad person. But I really liked that he kind of brings in this theme in the book of sort of, like, toxic ambition and the lengths people are willing to go to in order to have something, like to have a special treasure. Because the kind of message in the book is that, like, Piranesi is the one who got the treasure because he didn't even care about it. Like, he learned from the house and, like, fell in love with the house, and, like, that, like, offering of, like, lost human knowledge was the gift of the labyrinth. And so anyone who came in purely to, like, extract for their own personal gain, like, could not learn that, like, they could not ever come out with the gift. And so I think that's just, like, I like it because it's very, like, fairy tale fable kind of lesson of, like, just showing it goes back to those, like, fairy tale roots of, like, the evil people cannot even see the gift when it's right in front of them.
The intentions matter.
Yeah.
Like Harry Potter finding a stone in his pocket.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fairy philosopher's stone.
Sorry, that's the best analogy I have.
It's true, though. I find myself, unfortunately, thinking about Harry Potter all the time these days. Now that I'm rereading it, I'm like, yeah, they really hit everything.
Oh, one of my friend's oldest kids just read the first one for the first time. And I was like, how did he like it? Is his life changed?
Did he say no? Yeah.
No, he loved it.
Okay, fair enough.
He loved it. And then they watched the first movie.
Aw, cute.
Yeah.
Yeah. That is very cute. Well, back to this book. So this book, Piranesi is a researcher in his past life. And that's one of the things that really stays true about him the entire time, is he retains the habits of a scientist and all his logging and journaling and, like, his this kind of urge to, like, discover and document. So the book is very scientific. Like, it talks about birds, like Catherine is saying, and, like, the weather patterns of the labyrinth. What did you guys think about that and the way they kind of worked the magic system into the real world?
The amount of OCD a person has to have to index their own journals is crazy to me. I never have that level of organization, time, or care. But I thought it was really interesting using, like, the scientific method in order to figure out the labyrinth and basically, like, discover the meaning of things. Because, like, you notice Piranesi knows things that he shouldn't, in theory, know, because he's never met a lion, but he's seen a lion statue. Why did he know the word for lion? And you see him start to work through that, where he's just like, there's some words I don't even know. And, like, having to come to conclusions, but using the scientific method to come to those conclusions. And I thought that was really interesting. And of course, a bunch of scientists would fuck around into alternate realities and do evil things, because that totally makes sense. like Oxford researchers being in a cult, basically.
Yeah.
I loved it because I absolutely would have gone about exploring the labyrinth the same way. Like, I'll, like, explore it hole on hole at a time until you know the map, you know? Mm-hmm. and probably would have written that stuff down too, but not quite this dramatically. But like, no one else would have survived in the house the way Piranesi did if he didn't have that scientific drive.
Mm-hmm.
Because he knew when to not be somewhere because it was going to flood. He knew directions based on the stars he could see there. And so I think that's what made him such an endearing character. It was like his scientific mind and optimism that just made him the perfect fit for the house.
Yeah. And you can see that too, because there are other bodies in the house. Like, there are human remains that Piranesi has found. And so not everyone was able to survive.
I mean, I think most people would go mad, like fully like commit suicide, yeah. Go mad.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure you would, but maybe at the point where you're at that like level, you just forget. like
Piranesi?
Yeah. Like, once the house becomes your only reality, then I guess you just kind of, you know, if you don't know what you've lost, you just learn
you find contentedness with what you have, right. Which I think was a big theme in the story anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Just like being content with the world around you.
When your world is small, you have a smaller, like a larger appreciation for big things.
Yeah. Like, this is skipping forward to the end, but I like really kind of loved that the book didn't end up being about revenge. Like, I love revenge in stories. I love a tale of revenge. And so that instinct was there, where I was almost at points like frustrated with Piranesi that he wasn't like, he didn't have more righteous anger over being wronged. Like, he lost so many years of his life in the house, but you realize that he just doesn't see it that way. He doesn't see those years as lost. Like, he sees those years as years he was able to become someone else and like fall in love with something new and like learn new things. And so then when he returns to the real world, he actually mourns the house and mourns his life there, even though he's ultimately glad to not be lonely anymore, because like the other theme in the book is that like other people are what bring your life meaning. And so it's like, I love that the book is actually just about him being able to appreciate both worlds and like seeing the beauty in both, even though like you're angry for him, but he's not angry.
Well, and the house is a diluted version of the real world. Like, these statues appear as, you know, certain art and ideas leave the world. They appear in the labyrinth. And so he has seen like the most diluted versions of the human experience caught in a moment. And so then when he goes back to the real world, he still sees the house, because he still sees those people, those statues, the things he took from those statues in the real world. And so it's interesting, because it almost getting such a small view made him appreciate the big thing more.
Yeah. I think he has a very like, it gave him a very undiluted gaze. Like, he can really see people for who they are, which seems like it wouldn't be true, because he's such an optimist that he can't understand people's bad intentions. But like, one of my favorite passages in the book is when he goes into the real world and then he's comparing everything he sees to statues in the house. And he's like recognizing what he saw in the house to what he's seeing in real life. And like, the beauty that was captured like in those moments was like so holy that they had to go into the house. Like, that's how important they are. And now he's like actually seeing them acted out, as opposed to being in a statue. And so it's like, but other like regular people, like, we don't really appreciate those moments in the same way, because we're like lost in the humdrum of the world. And the house taught him to just see the beauty in those moments instead.
Yeah. It's the small moments. Cause like, when you're so used to something, you're used to the sound of cars in the background, you're used to the hum of electronics. Like, people talk about when they like go off grid and they don't have like any of electronic devices, coming back to like a New York City or a city in general, you hear a low lying hum throughout your life, and you just, it fades to the background because you don't think about it anymore when you're in it. But when you come back to it, it keeps you up because you're not used to it anymore. And so it's very much so like, he's cataloging and noticing those little moments that are really important in life. And he is, his mind has been expanded because of it, which I found very interesting. And I like that he has this kind of wonder about the world. I think that's what makes him such a good character, is that if he had gone for revenge against the other, it wouldn't have made him him, and it wouldn't have made him someone who really is fascinated with humans and also like loves them and loves the human experience, loves humans and humanity and wants them to succeed. He loves all animals too. Like he's just someone who loves deeply and wonders deeply and wants to see the wonder of all the world. And that just makes him such a fun and interesting character to follow through a very dark situation.
Yeah.
I did see some people on the Reddit threads discussing it. A couple of them thought maybe he was schizophrenic and this was like a delusion, which I don't think so. I think it is very literally written. Like, yeah, this is what happened. However, some people said it was a really good like representation of trauma. Mm-hmm. How people will sometimes like dissociate to cope and are a different person afterwards and, you know, have different appreciations for different things. And I thought that was really interesting that maybe people who have had traumatic experiences are connecting with it, because I could see that. And just, you know, the smaller things become more beautiful when you've endured something so, so hard.
Yeah. I also liked, like, I think the ending is very painful because Piranesi knows that he's sort of like lost something. Like he's lost the innocence with which he used to view the world. But I think I really, really liked that the book overall portrayed that as like a good thing. Like it's always sad and painful that you can never go back to who you were before, but moving forward and becoming someone new can be equally as beautiful. And so I think, you know, like at the end of the book, I was like tearing up because of that, that it's just like, you know.
And finding people who walked with you through that period. So like Raphael, now he has someone who also visits the house with him, who came and find him. And she knows, you know, they have this shared experience. So they're extra close. They're trauma bonded. It's like us three.
Yeah.
And that's for sure on that one.
Yeah. No, it's super cute. Like Raphael and him, and just like how he's, I don't know, how he views the world and how he sees things, and like also going back to help James. And like he didn't have to do that. He didn't have to go and bring James back to the labyrinth because it seemed like it helped him and helped him heal a bit. And he made sure that James didn't just get stuck there. He's like, I'll take you when you want, but I'm taking you back to the real world once it's over. And I thought that was a very sweet moment that didn't necessarily need to be included in the book, but I thought that was just like a really good, nice touch of like him recognizing. Yeah.
Right. I also like that, like, he doesn't forget about the house, like him and Raphael and Matthew, like, they still return. Like it's still, there's something about it that's like so important to them that they continue to seek it out. Because it's like on its face, it is just a house. Like Piranesi moved through it for years and years, like looking for things. And it really is just like a gigantic mansion full of statues. Like there's no other secret treasure other than like the wonder of something magical. And so,
you know, appreciating these moments of art with no time constraint.
Mm-hmm. Totally leaving the
model. The last line of the book, like branded on me, because it leaves it, you know, you're like, wait, did he go back? Did he not? But like, it's kind of open at the end because it says the beauty of the house is immeasurable, its kindness infinite. Yeah. So
that's the quote I have on my mirror.
Yeah. And I feel like that's just, it's talking about real life. Life is beautiful when its kindness is infinite.
Yeah. And he's also, I think, how I interpret that last line is he's come to view the real world as also being the house. Like they're no longer distinct, separate worlds in his mind. They're merged. Yeah,
he sees it's the reflection of each other in each world.
Like, the real world kind of created the house, because what happens in the real world then gets transposed into the house. And so noticing those moments where he can reintegrate into society and stuff like that, because that's always the hardest part for people who experience trauma or like kidnapped and stuff like that. It's the reintegration process. It's honestly the harder part because everything's moving too fast. So I love that he was able to like find like almost a third personality, because he's like, I'm no longer Piranesi. I'm no longer Matthew. I'm kind of something else, because I have to kind of walk this world differently after my experiences. So I do like thinking about like what y'all said about talking about mental health and schizophrenia and stuff like that. I could definitely see arguments for it, just because of how it like depicted trauma and depicted
the different personalities. I see where people might get that, but I think it's meant to be taken literally that he experienced this other world.
Yes.
Right. But it definitely, I think, relates well with people who have had great trauma.
Right. Well, there are other characters in the book. For most of the book, you're very narrowed in on Piranesi, but eventually we meet Raphael. And we kind of learn Piranesi's past. And so Raphael is this investigator who goes to look for Piranesi. And she like really goes to great lengths to find him. Like, she basically has to like unlock this like magical, I forget what they're called, ritual, in order to like from this like crazed scientist, in order to even get to the labyrinth. And like, you know, it's kind of crazy.
But I feel like we find out he'd been gone like 5 years or something before she found him. So she's looking for him still.
Yeah. And it's crazy. And then she enters into the labyrinth, which is very dangerous, to find him. And there's all these like notes they're leaving back and forth. And like the other is trying to sabotage it because, you know, he knows he's going to get found out. And so it's, at the end there, all of a sudden the plot has appeared, right? Like, all of a sudden there's actions happening.
Very brief. You discover who Piranesi really is. The other tries to kill him and he dies instead. Mm-hmm. The end.
Yeah.
Not really. That's not the end. It's just like the most exciting point of the book. It happens all at once.
What did you guys think about that part of the book? And what did you think of Raphael? And
I liked her a lot, because she was like, this two sides of the same coin, like very much so, very much like Piranesi. And like, even like her colleagues are like, she's difficult to get along with. She's a little weird, but she's singularly focused on helping and saving people. And that's her main mission in life. And she does whatever it takes to help people. And that's very much so what Piranesi has been doing with even the dead, where it's like, you honor the dead, you keep them safe. And then like also feeling a degree of wanting to help the other, even though that is his main villain. And that is the person who trapped him here and destroyed his life in a way so that he could be reborn into a new life. So yeah, I thought it was cute. I hope that they trauma bond some more, maybe get together, make some house babies.
That would be crazy.
The death of the other was kind of anticlimactic. However, I think it fit the story well, because despite it all, Piranesi's like, why would I leave? This is my home. And he still tends to the other's body like he does the other skeletons that are in the house. And ultimately, like, he starts thinking about other people, and that's why he leaves. But having Raphael like turn everything upside down very quickly, however anticlimactic it really was, it made him realize that nice people can change your life. Kind people.
Yeah. I also liked how anticlimactic it was, because it's making the point that like escaping the labyrinth was not the point. Mm-hmm. And that like getting revenge and the other getting what was coming to him isn't the point. Even though that means you really have to like, this book like really is a battle sometimes. Like, I was like, I want Piranesi to like stand up for himself and like tell this guy where to put it. But like, that's not the point. And I was like,
he is. Also, the death was foreshadowed with all the flooding. You were like, yep, this guy's gonna drown.
And he's afraid of the water.
Yeah. And he wouldn't listen to Piranesi. He wouldn't listen to Matthew.
Yeah, he thought he was smart and knew everything. And in the end, it was the guy whose memory he got wiped that held on to the smartest parts of humanity.
Yeah. And also tried to help him.
Yeah.
Okay. So, yeah, I mean, do you guys have anything else to say about the ending? How did you feel when the book was over?
I wanted to talk about it real bad, so I went to Reddit to read what other people said. And I'm glad we're talking about it, because it's a great book to discuss.
It's great having only read it right before this podcast, because I immediately get to talk about it.
I finished it well over a week ago.
I know. So. Well, I've finished it like several months ago. Now you guys know why I wanted us to do this book so bad.
Well, it's a very you book.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's a very you book. It's like, it gives you warm fuzzies a little bit.
Yes. It makes you hope for humanity.
Yeah.
When a lot of things can make you not hope for humanity.
Yeah. It also is, I feel like I've developed the same kind of fascination with the house that I have with like Hogwarts, where I just really wish I could go. Like, I really want to go.
Maybe you can.
Maybe.
Meditate. Become a child. That's what they said, yeah. Right?
Yeah.
Stand in your parents' garden and think.
Yeah, I will give it my best shot. Don't know that I have what it takes ultimately, but...
Well, we brought up book recommendations at the beginning.
And you're just the Hobbesses.
That is the one while reading I kept thinking of with like the evil act, thinking about with the evil academics pursuing a realm they're not supposed to be in. However, this is like the warm and fuzzy version where Catharsis is like quite literally a journey to hell.
Yeah, you're in hell. I'm going to recommend I Who Have Never Known Men, because very similar vibes in the sense of like discovering like somewhat unreliable narrator, but a narrator who doesn't know the world and then has to experience the world. And her journey throughout this kind of apocalyptic universe. So, yeah.
I've recommended this book before, but it's been a minute. But it's called The Silence of the Girls. And I just think of it anytime I read a book like this, where the point, like the main character goes through hard things and like the point isn't revenge. Like, and that's kind of how The Silence of the Girls is. It's also it's a Greek retelling more directly. It's another reimagining of Achilles and his story, except it's told from the perspective of one of the women who is enslaved and conquered by Achilles and his war tribe on their way to Troy or wherever they're going. And so, yeah, it's like kind of similar. Again, Greek retelling, the main character is a slave, so she's very, very powerless. And like the story is extremely realistic and like beautifully written, and so and it also has a very bittersweet ending. So
okay, well, that was a lovely little episode. We weren't hating on anything really. It's probably a nice change of pace for our listeners, huh?
From last week for sure. If you wanted a more heated episode, go to our last episode, The Raven Scholar.
I know. That's why I love this book. We just got to have a lovely little convo about the meaning of life.
But as always, these are our opinions. They don't have to be yours. If you want to get in on the discussion, send us a message. Head to our Instagram comments at Busy Girls Pod. Everywhere on social media, busygirlspod.com. If you want to see our book ranks. And yeah.
Yeah. And with that, I'm Catherine.
I'm Caitlin.
And I'm Casey. Thanks for listening. And when you get a chance, take a break with the Busy Girls Book Club.